I'm Adam Foster, along with Jake Hamlin and Ethan Saporito. You are listening to the Project Prospect Podcast. How's it going, guys?
Hey.
It's going all right.
So we just fresh off a trip to the Arizona Fall League. Ethan, you were there with us briefly. Jake, I think we were around each other plenty for that period of time. It was great
Absolutely.
To take in so many games and finally see so many of these guys. It's funny when you see them on paper for so long and look at mug shots, it doesn't always do justice, and getting to see them play makes a whole difference. So, Ethan, you were there with us for the Rising Star Showcase. You got to catch a couple games before. Who were some of the guys who really made impressions on you right away?
First off, I really like Dustin Ackley. I was kind of waiting to see how he fared against professional competition before I got too excited about him, but his bat really impressed me. Really smooth swing, very level approach. He seems like a guy who can hit for a pretty solid average. Everything he hit seemed to be hit pretty hard, and he didn't get fooled too often from the times that I had seen him. But
how about you, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, at the Rising Sergeant Showcase, Ackley has a very, very pretty swing. Obviously, there's a number of questions about what position he's going to play, and he's got question marks about his power. You know, I feel like he's got to play center field for him to really be a plus if he's playing in left field. I don't know that he's going to hit for enough power. And I know, Adam, you and I disagree about whether he could hit for the power if he wanted to, and he's choosing to hit line drives. You know, I feel like he's just got a really pretty line drive swing that's going to play a lot better in center field than in the corners.
Wait, what do we disagree about there?
That I don't. You think he's got a lot more power potential than I do?
Well, I talked to him about it.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say he's got a lot of tools though. He's just fun to watch take batting practice because every time he hits the ball, the sound is just really sweet, you know.
Yeah, he has a really sweet swing. We saw him hit some monster jacks. We'll see what it turns out to be, and it'll be interesting to see too if he ends up being a center fielder. Or when I talked to him, he said thinks his most likely destination is center field or left field. And given some of the defenders that are already up there in Seattle, I almost wonder if he's going to end up being a left fielder. If he does end up there, I think he'd be an above-average defender. But definitely a fun guy to see. And I would say the guy who impressed me most at the Fall League was Matt Dominguez. We didn't get to see him on the field, but his poker face in the dugout was absolutely knockout. I think he has a lot of upside in that regard.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'd imagine him as just a really strong presence on the bench, cheering guys on. And, you know, I think he's going to be a huge clubhouse factor, right? That's what we saw?
Something like that. Unfortunately, he wasn't playing when we were there. And it is tough this deep into the season. The reoccurring thing you hear about with the Fall League players is that they are pretty exhausted, especially talking to Buster Posey. He started reporting in February when pitchers and catchers report, and some of these guys got a few weeks off after the minor league season, especially if they weren't playing in the playoffs. But Buster Posey played from February through September, played all the way through with the Giants, even though he wasn't getting many at-bats or anything. He was getting used heavily as a bullpen catcher, and now he's out here in the Fall League. And you get a guy playing almost 10 months in a row like that, and he was saying that he thinks even the outfielders are starting to feel heavy legs, the nimble guys who run well. So you don't only see everyone at their best. You don't always see them playing like they would during the regular season.
Definitely. I mean, Buster Posey, you know, with all the time I spent in San Jose, I got to see him play a lot, and he looked like a different guy, just in terms of he didn't have the same sort of bounce in his step, and his swing looked flat, and he was, you know, he looked tired. He didn't play anything close to his best.
And for anyone out there who is wondering, yes, Jake is dating Buster Posey right now. We're going to end the Posey conversation there.
So, sounds good.
The point of this podcast, we kind of just wanted to give you guys some insight on Ethan, and Jake and I have been working a little bit tonight on a top prospect list for the Arizona Fall League. It's fun because there are so many good talents there that we're really thinking long and hard about how we're going to rank these guys since we've seen them play now. We've looked at their numbers, and hopefully we get it to a point where we're sticking with the same order or something very similar when we do our top 200 this offseason and the top 100 before that. And Ethan and I have gone through, we put together a list of guys who we think almost belong on the list, a group of guys who are honorable mentions, and we've really debated the top five. And we don't need to go in the specifics of the order just yet. We're still going to run it by some other people and think about it more, but we've had a lot of conversation about who belongs at the tail end of the top five and those four or five spots. I think, Ethan, would you say we're in agreement that Steven Strasburg and Jake's guy, Buster Posey, are probably 1-2 on the list?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see any way how another player could jump those guys at this point.
And Strasburg,
I was looking for something to not like about Strasburg when we saw him pitch. I was like, no, there's too much hype. Fine, what's really not here? But he just, wow, he's pretty good.
Unfortunately, he's not going to get to be seen on the national stage, at least on MLB Network this time around in the Fall League. He was supposed to be pitching in the Rising Star Showcase, had a stiff neck, and I found out from my fun group of Twitter people I follow on Twitter that Strasburg isn't going to be pitching in the championship game this weekend. Sounds like he tweaked his knee or something during batting practice picking up a ball.
He's injury prone.
Yeah, there are definitely people starting to ask about that already. But I don't know, it could be a blend of the Nationals just not wanting him to get run down too much by the media. When we were there, Jake and I tried to talk to him multiple times, but they only hold press conferences when you can talk to him. He doesn't do interviews before the games like every other player does. And people were following him home, asking for his autograph. If I was Strasburg right now, I'd be pretty mentally fatigued. And I think some people almost want to give him a bad rap for not being more eager to talk to the media. But I think there's a very strong case to be made that he's the most hyped baseball prospect ever. And it gets to the point where you just got to give the guy a mental break. So if the knee injury isn't that big of a deal and he could have pitched this weekend, but the Nationals don't want him on TV and he doesn't have to worry about all the interviews, I don't blame it at all.
Yeah, I mean, he's got nothing to gain by pitching in that game. If he goes out and throws four shutout innings, people are just going to say, oh, it's Strasburg, it's what we expected. If he goes out and gives up, God forbid, two runs and walks a guy, people are going to suddenly start questioning him. And he just, you know, he doesn't need that. The Nationals don't need that. I understand the caution.
And then just the last thing with Strasburg, we got to see his changeup exhibited in the game that we saw him pitch last week. And it definitely is a plus pitch to go along with the plus breaking ball and the plus fastball. So we're looking at a guy with three plus pitches. Yeah, he might not have the mechanics to stay healthy for 10 years, but who does? He's definitely going to be someone who is big league ready in a hurry and could be a true ace pretty quickly. So we've touched on Posey and Ackley a little bit. Some of the other guys who were debating for the bottom parts of the list, I'll give you a slew of names right now. Dominic Brown, Starlin Castro, Mike Leake, Henry Mejia, Thomas Neal, Jose Tabata, Yonder Alonso, Josh Bell, Jonathan Lucroy, Jameel Weeks, Chris Heisey, Ike Davis, Jose Iglesias, Tanner Sheppers. We were definitely privileged with the amount of talent that we could see in the league this year. Who was someone who really stuck out at you, Ethan? Either someone who you did get to see play there or someone who you followed this season?
Henry Mejia, I made a big push for him. I really like what he has done. One, in terms of just being so young and so advanced already. I love that he's a power pitcher who has elite ground ball rates. And I think that he's got obviously a really high ceiling, which we all agree with. But I think that he's a guy who just has a really good chance to turn out as a top of the rotation pitcher. The command is a bit of an issue at this point, but and this is where we're kind of split on this. I think that his increase in walk rate from going to single A, from single A to double A, could be due more to the fact that he was already pitching further than he had ever pitched into a season before. And I think as he moves up, that's something that could be corrected and could end up getting closer to what he put up at single A.
And Jake, you got to see Mejia when he pitched in the Fall League. What'd you think of him?
He's a lottery ticket. I mean, that's how I feel about him. He's obviously, we've seen the fastball. We talked about the ground ball rate. I was not particularly impressed with his command. You know, he looks, he looks like a guy who's still learning. And so he's obviously got, I mean, a 20-year-old in double A with that kind of stuff is a rare thing. But at the same time, I don't think there's any guarantee that he's going to put it together. And it's going to be a couple of years. If Ethan's theory about the walk rate and the innings issue is true, then it's going to be a couple of years before he's even able to throw a full major league season. So there's a lot of steps he's got to make before he's really in the elite sort of Strasburg level of prospect.
And it's kind of fun because when you get guys showcased at the fall league, I think even the people who follow prospects really closely, you look at them on paper, you could talk to a number of scouts about them, but it does make a huge difference when you get to see them, and especially if it's not just once, but multiple times. And I think Mejia might be a guy who, in a way, he's benefited from being in the fall league and pitching out in surprise where they do have pitch FX, so everyone knows the velocities for real. You can see the movement on the curveball. We have video of the curveball. You can see that it has awesome movement. But at the same time, I think there are some guys who kind of get overhyped, and Madison Bumgarner is just someone who comes to mind because I don't know how many people got out to see him last year when he was pitching in the South Atlantic League, and I think even though he still has a really high upside, once more of us got out and saw him in the California League and Eastern League, people started being a little bit more cautious. And I think someone this year who could be overhyped, but then as people see more of him, he falls back down a bit, is Jordan Lyles. But for the sake of the fall league, Mejia might be a guy just because so many people see that he has some command troubles and he's getting hit relatively regularly in his limited AFL sample, that there might be some reason to be more cautious. And maybe someone on the flip side of the coin could be Starlin Castro. He was someone you got a brief look at, right, Ethan?
Yeah.
And I think the thing that caught my eye with Castro, he has soft hands, a good arm. He has a smooth, level swing. He stays very balanced. He's just a smooth player in all aspects of the game, not terribly flashy or anything, but very impressive. He was, like Mejia, another teenager who reached the upper minors. Jake, you got to see him multiple times, right?
Yes, I did. I did. He's fun to watch him, So we got a couple of opportunities to see. He was on the same team as Jose Iglesias, the Red Sox Cuban shortstop that they just picked up. And just you just watch the two of them take infield. They put on a show. They're both terrific defenders. Castro has a really, really terrific contact swing. He doesn't strike out. He offensively has put up some solid numbers, high batting averages. You know, his walk rate leaves a lot to be desired. The big question with him, it sounds like between us, and we haven't heard this discussion in many other places, but is he going to take a shortstop? You know, he's got a bigger lower half than you'd expect. He's young, which means he can grow. And whether his package of skills is as valuable, say, in third base or right field as it is at shortstop is going to be the question for him going forward, I think.
Yeah, and it was pretty telling for me. I put up a YouTube video you should check out with Iglesias and Castro taking ground balls during the Rising Stars game. I got it where they're alternating. 3,000 other people have seen it. But you can really see with Iglesias, he's just a wizard at shortstop, and he already looks like a guy who's going to be above average defensive shortstop. And just comparing him to Castro, yeah, Castro's smooth. Yeah, he has good hands. He kind of glides to the ball. But I think there's some efficiency to be desired with Castro and his movements. And then, like you mentioned, Jake, I was just looking at some video of him again, and if you look at from the knee area up to his waist, he is a little thick, and not like I expect him to get huge or anything, but Tim Beckham's someone this year who people said he really started developing that thick lower half, and you don't see any shortstops who are built that way. And you got to wonder with a teenager, as his metabolism slows down a little bit more, how much bigger he's going to get. And I'm not saying that Castro is a lock to move off shortstop or anything like that, but to me, I don't feel confident going full bore ahead saying that he's definitely going to stick at the position like I do with Iglesias. You look at someone like Hector Gomez, and he definitely has the build to be a shortstop. Some of these really thin guys who, if they're adding strength, it's developing more muscle, not so much adding weight to their lower half. So I think there is that reason for hesitation with Castro, and maybe transitioning to another guy who has a big lower half and probably hasn't played shortstop since he was a teenager, and Thomas Neal. That he's someone you got to see pretty regularly this year in San Jose, right, Jake?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's up there on my list. You know, he's not quite at the Posey level, but his breakout was real this year. He's got good power. He really has a good approach at the plate, and he's just so much more athletic than you would think he would be from the first glance. And as I think you saw him run out of triple, and he actually, I think, led the league in stolen bases at the fall league this year. He actually moves pretty good for a guy that big, which is exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there are a lot of people who look at what Neil did when he was in low A Augusta as a 21-year-old, which by no means is old for low A, and he finished this year as a 22-year-old in high A. So he's not one of these super young guys, turned 22 in August. He's still relatively young for the level. But the thing that I noticed in comparing his low A numbers to his high A numbers is that he had a good walk rate at both levels. He had a solid strikeout rate. He really turned the corner in terms of his ability to manage the strike zone this year. And really the big difference, and he had shoulder surgery in 2007, which kind of slowed him. He didn't play much that year at all, just some time in rookie ball, is the power really came on this year. He had a 166 isolated power in low A in 2008, went up to 242 this year in high A. Granted, he had a high batting average in balls in play, but as we've seen in the fall league, he does have some nimbleness and some speed to him, and he's also an excellent line drive hitter, just the kind of guy who's squaring up on the ball pretty regularly. At this point, I have a very hard time imagining his bat not reaching the big leagues. Ethan, was there anyone else who stuck out to you?
You kind of touched on Iglesias. Really, really liked him defensively. One thing I don't think you mentioned is that he had such a short stroke. And granted, he looked pretty overmatched at the plate thus far. But I think that there's enough potential there to get me excited. You and I were talking earlier that if his bat can turn out to be even remotely solid, he could be an average big leaguer.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting about him is seeing what kind of patience he exhibits in his first full season. He looks like a guy who's going to be a good contact hitter. Even talking to some of his teammates with Mesa, he's not the guy who's hitting balls out in batting practice and not doing it in the game, where you can see that raw power, kind of like you see with Dustin Ackley, and there was always talk with Fernando Martinez and even Angel Villalona. Some of these guys who just put on awesome batting practice displays, but then they can't turn it into the game. Iglesias isn't even someone who hits for power during batting practice, which probably means he's not going to have much as he matures. But if he can be a really good contact hitter with that defense, he's going to have value. It's just going to be in Cuba, he didn't walk much at all, and it's hard to take those stats and really translate them. But I would expect him to walk even less in the big leagues, and he could have one of the lowest walk rates in baseball next year. I wouldn't put it past him. We didn't get to see that much of him at the fall league. We probably saw him play 3 or 4 times, so it's hard for me to comment too much on the patience. I'd almost want to default to the numbers there, but there's definitely some things to think about with the bat before anyone hoists him up as one of the top shortstop prospects in baseball. I think he's definitely elite, but there's some things to give a closer look. How about you, Jake? Anyone else we haven't touched on who you want to go in more detail on?
Well, you know, as we're talking about young Latin American shortstops, there is one big name that we missed, Carlos Traianfel, who, we talk about a thick lower half. I can't imagine that he'll be playing shortstop much longer, though he didn't embarrass himself at the fall league. But his bat just really grew on me as the week went on. The more we saw him, I think as an offensive threat, it's really for real. I'm really excited to see what he does next year.
Yeah, and Traianfel is someone who was added to the league midway, I believe. He played his first game in the fall league on October 29th, and he's been splitting time between second base, shortstop. He even has a start at third. I think third base is going to be his home in the end. He's someone who's gotten big enough where he's probably not, or I'd be shocked if he has the range to stick at shortstop. I think he's a third baseman because he has such a good arm. The thing with him is, even though he's a good contact hitter, and we got to see him hit a home run in the Rising Stars game, he hasn't had any since. He actually has 2 extra base hits, both doubles, and 49 at-bats, and both of those doubles came in the same game, which I believe we are present at, Jake. But he's another guy,
probably,
like Iglesias, he doesn't walk basically at all. Traianfel's walked twice through, I think, around 70 plate appearances so far in the fall league, and between that and him moving off shortstop, I think that puts a huge ding in his ceiling. I guess one other guy I'd want to bring up, and Ethan, we talked a little bit about Tanner Sheppers, how Lincoln, our draft guy, had Sheppers as having the second best stuff among the pitchers in the 2009 draft, only behind Strasburg. I think we've seen that so far in the fall league and his junior year in college, 6 strikeout rates. There are some questions about the command. It's been solid, but nothing outstanding in the fall league. He's someone where if he ends up being able to handle a starter's workload, he's going to have a lot of value, but there are some people who wonder if he has the command. And also, you always wonder with a pitcher if he's going to stay healthy. Sheppers did have a shoulder injury his junior year in college, which hurt him a lot in the draft. It seemed like he was definitely going all out, though, with the Rising Stars game, right, Ethan?
Yeah, absolutely. Nobody from the Rising Stars game impressed me as much as Sheppers did. He was sitting around 97 miles an hour with his fastball and hit 99 on the gun twice. I mean, no one made solid contact against him. He looked very overpowering. And we were talking a little bit about whether his role is as a starter or a reliever. And as a starter, if he has the secondary pitches to really come into that, and if he can hold up for an entire season, then obviously he's got great upside there. But even as a relief pitcher, like, he could be a very dominating back of the bullpen arm.
Yeah, he could be ready in a hurry in the big leagues. He could be ready as soon as next season if he's coming up as a reliever. The only other guys I wanted to touch on a little bit were Chris Heisey. Was someone who I entered the fall league not really being too high on. He's one of those guys who was a little old compared to some of the top prospects, but he was similar to Neil in my mind in that he does have a bit of a bigger build where he doesn't look like a center fielder to me, even though he runs really well. Really impressed with how well he squared up on the ball. Seems like he manages the strike zone pretty well and has some power there. And then the other one was Jonathan Lucroy. I really gave him a close look at defense, and I thought he was a good ball blocker. He has a very good arm, good receiver. Jason Castro gets a lot of talk about being a close to big league ready catcher. But Lucroy was someone who I think has a higher ceiling than Castro. He hits for a good amount of power, solid walk rate, even though he hasn't walked in the fall leagues. I think he's a solid bet to become an average big league catcher, and you can't say that about many guys. He was someone who was just squaring up on the ball consistently when we saw him play, and kind of went towards a funk at the tail end of when we saw him, but seems like someone who gets overlooked a little bit because he isn't really a flashy prospect. He wasn't a huge draft guy. I don't think he went in the top couple rounds, but seems pretty solid all around. Any closing notes from you, Jake?
Well, I think, first of all, Lucroy, you know, the Brewers certainly aren't overlooking him. I mean, he could end up being their catcher this coming year. He's definitely a guy who's showed himself to be a big leaguer, which is, again, there just aren't many catchers who do that. So that was pretty cool. The other guy I wanted to touch on simply because I think he's going to be in the big leagues this year, or if not this year, then very, very soon, was Drew Storm, the 10th pick in the draft by the Nationals. And again, it's how cool is it that we got to see that in this many top draft picks in the fall league, you know? But I wanted to just sort of mention about Storen that he's a guy with, you know, because he's going to be their closer and probably soon, how much fun it is. And I say that in like, in not so great way, that he's a bit of an adventure out there on the mound. And is a guy who is probably going to be on the soon. I want to know what you guys thought of Storen as well.
Yeah, I'm thumbing through my notes now. I know he had a lot of fastball velocity, and I think he was consistently showing a good breaking ball. One of those relievers, definitely, when he enters the game, he jumps out at you. And I'm noticing now, yeah, he only pitched, I guess it was about 37 innings last year, was too good for low A, 44.1% strikeout rate versus a 0% walk rate. Doesn't seem to be a big ground ball guy. And once he got to double A, albeit just, 45 batters faced, he did walk 6 of them, so 13% walk rate. The walks went down every time he was promoted. Or the walks went up every time he was promoted. The strikeouts went down. I wonder, though, about projecting someone like that to already be a closer. I know it's fun to see the top college relief pitchers and think about how quickly they can move, but there sure are a lot of cases of dominant college pitchers who don't go on to be dominant big league pitchers. And even though Storin has the stuff where I think he's going to move along quickly, it will be interesting to see what he does as far as his command goes, and I'll have to look more at his Fall League numbers, maybe while you give your thoughts on him, Ethan.
Yeah, kind of what you were saying, just showed a good fastball and showed a good curveball, like you were just noting, though. I don't know if it was so overpowering that I would be comfortable projecting him as a top-notch back-end guy like a Tanner Shepherds or someone like that. I mean, obviously, he's a guy that we'll want to watch closely going into next year and see how he fares again in a much larger sample size than, you know, 60 batters faced or whatever. But I, first impressions, I wasn't blown away with him being a dominant closer.
You've given me just enough time to calculate his AFL strikeout and walk percentages. I have him at a 5.1 walk rate through 59 total batters faced, 22.2% strikeout rate. He has the ERA, for the people who prefer the antiquated metrics, below 1. So he's going to catch some eyes with that. His whip, 1.39. But definitely a guy who's holding his own as far as command and strikeout ability in a very hitter-friendly league.
Absolutely. He's a guy, I mean, when you get to guys who are at this sort of level of, in the upper minors where he's at, you have to start looking at the teams that they're on and where sort of what their path to the big leagues looks like, I think. And he's a guy who's pretty open path to the big leagues, which is why I was really interested in getting to see him.
Yeah. So we're going to have more AFL coverage coming for you. Look for our AFL top 5 prospect list with a bunch of honorable mentions soon. We're going to keep rolling out interviews. Ethan, you might have one wrap-up column for us, right?
Yeah, I'm planning to get something out.
And Jake, I think I'm just about ready to book our Arizona Fall League trip for 2010, are you?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, until next time, I'm Adam Foster. You've been listening to the Project Prospect Podcast with Jake Hammond and Ethan Saporito.